Well, thank you. It's good to be here this morning. It's fantastic to be in a place where your last name can end in M-A, Ma, and people don't feel a need to put an N on the end and turn it into Man. It's amazing. Actually, people can actually pronounce it right, although we were on a flight one time on the Dutch KLM going to Holland, and a stewardess came up and started talking to me, asked my name, and I said, no, that's not my name, it's Datema. And they said, no, you're not pronouncing it right. So I have a lot of grace with a lot of other people. I want to start, and I guess I said this wrong this morning, and I might have scared some people. Kim told me this. But we're going to start with a six-week series on finding your bearings. We have that up here. And I wanted to do this because we're both going through this transition. You have a new pastor and I have a new congregation, and it kind of throws us off a little bit. I have a good illustration of that. There's a tribe, an Aboriginal tribe in Australia. And I go to the next slide. You see the name there. I think it's Gugu Yimithir. But I know that some people probably thought my granddaughter got a hold of the keyboard and made that up. It's an interesting tribe. It's not a very large tribe, but it's interesting because they speak what's called a spatial language. I don't know what they call ours, but this is how it goes, because it's kind of confusing what's a spatial language. But we sing this song. You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out. Put your left foot in and you shake it all about, right? Well, now what these people would do, they are spatially cardinal directions. So they would say, and I have to think about this every time, and I've done this several times this week trying to figure out this room, but they would say, you put your west foot in, you put your west foot out, you put your west, I'm surprised I can do this, and you shake it all about. But you see what's going on there? That this is the difficulty. If you turn just a quarter turn our way, guess what? It's still left foot, right? But for them, it's now you got to put your south foot in, your south foot out. And can you imagine how difficult it is? Every time you enter a room, you have to be aware of what direction is which. And they say they can take these people, blindfold them, put them in a room with no artificial light whatsoever, or I mean, no natural light whatsoever, only artificial light, and they are very good, much better than we are, at knowing direction. Now, some people really need to know direction even a little bit. That would be helpful. But how great it would be to be able to do that and be able to come into a new situation like this and be able to just fall right in, no problems, seamless, all those kinds of things. And I would like to be able to do that, but I wouldn't like to go through what they have to go through to learn that. And so I wanted to spend this first 6 weeks just finding our bearings, just kind of getting an idea of what I think is important for a church, and listening to you and hearing what you think is important for a church and discussing that. And I want to tell you, first off, the staff here has been fantastic. They are helpful. They answer my questions. They don't laugh at my questions. They've just been fantastic, and I just really have appreciated them so far. But today we're going to talk about obedience, because I think obedience is so key to being effective as individuals, as families, and as a church. And so we're going to do that. But before we get to that, I just want to introduce my family. Kim is over here, and you'll recognize her laugh. She's from Freeport, which is not far away, and I think the first place she went when she left Freeport was Huntington, Indiana, to college, and that's where we met. And that's all you need to know. So, no. She laughs a lot. We find her by listening, and she laughs loud. So, and I don't know who it was. I don't know if it's somebody in this room, but apparently yesterday at our meet and greet, somebody encouraged her. You shouldn't have done that. It's not going to be pretty. But they said, don't ever lose your laugh. So, But that's Kim. Here's my story. When people ask me where I'm from, it's just a disaster. It's just... So here it is in a rundown. Just see how long you can last, because there's a test before you can leave, before you get lunch. I thought I was pretty good at introducing myself. I don't know how many of you know, but the beginning of the month, I was hospitalized with a migraine. And they brought me food every day. They were good about that. But every time they walked in with the food, they would say, "Can you tell me your name, when you were born?" And they have my food. And what's going to happen if I don't answer this right? And I know my name, but I want to make sure I don't stumble, because this is serious. So I'm Tom Datema. I was born January 31st, 1964. Donald Trump is the president. The year is 2020. I'm in Gaines Church. See, I can do it. But here's my rundown. I was born in Huntington, Indiana. A few months later, I moved to Jamaica. We were there for 4 years. Moved to Sierra Leone, West Africa for 3 years. Moved to Granville. My dad was a pastor of Maple Hill Church for 5 years. Back to Sierra Leone for 5 years. Huntington, Indiana for 8 years. Florida and Alabama for a little over a year. Sierra Leone for 4 years. A church, Dillman Church is what it was called, for 3 years. Zanesville Church for just shy of 22 years, and now I'm here. So that'll be the test, if you can get that. We have four kids, and the first one is Ben and Stephanie, and I always have to look back and see what the slide is, because you didn't even know I was going to use that one, did you? But that's Ben and Stephanie and JT and Penelope, and you might see them around. Because they live indoor. So that's the first one. The next one is Adam. And Adam, he was a camp counselor for several years, as well as a program director. And his favorite game was catch the grease pig. And he was pretty good at it, apparently. But Adam is married to Emily. Adam is a co-owner of a coffee roastery in Indianapolis. And Emily works with nonprofits in Indianapolis. They've been married just... well, about a year and a half now. I guess that's about right. So that's Adam. Next is Michael. He also lives in Indianapolis. He's in flight school to be a pilot. And then the next is Gabby. And Gabby just graduated with a degree in theater from Indiana University. We tease her. We say she's training to be a waitress. We should at least have that class in the course. But... she just graduated. She still lives in Bloomington, but she's headed to Chicago later this year. So that's our kids, our four kids, and hopefully they'll be around sometime. It's a lot farther of a drive than it used to be to come home, but I'm sure they'll be here sometime. Well, let's talk today then about obedience. And to do that, I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 22. And in Genesis chapter 22, while you're looking at that, I just want to kind of fill in the background. God had promised Abraham that he was going to be the father of a great nation, which was highly unlikely because Abraham didn't have any kids and he was old already. He finally has a son, miraculously, as a son, Isaac. He's 100 years old when he has Isaac. I had diapers to change for 11 years. I can't imagine, and I was young. I had a little bit of stamina. I can't imagine. The only thing, at 100, maybe my sense of smell might go. But and so this is what happens then in chapter 22, verse 1. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you." Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up, said to his father Abraham, "Father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said. "But where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offerings, my son." And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar. On top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." Obedience is an interesting thing in our time, in our society. You don't see as much of it probably as we used to. We struggle with obedience. We kind of don't like it. It's interesting why that might be. I think one of the reasons we don't like obedience, because it gives us this, it lowers our status. Suddenly, we are less. Somebody else is the master, and we are the servant. We don't like that as much. And so we want a situation where we can say, "Yeah, everybody's equal." And so we don't recognize that. And so we have this issue with it. Sometimes it's because we feel it's taking away our independence. And one of the things that you don't want to do to somebody in this country is talk about taking away their independence. We just love that. I mean, even when we were kids, mainly when we got to be a teenager, and our parents would tell us to do something and we didn't want to do it, but you know, the keys to the car hang in the balance, and so you have a tendency to really struggle with this thing because you want your independence and you don't want to obey. Sometimes we're afraid of what other people might think, and you think about Abraham here. You know, he's going to be a great nation, and he's been asked to sacrifice his son. How, you know, what would people think about doing such a horrible thing? And so sometimes we're worried about that. And sometimes we just don't want to. We just don't want to sacrifice. You know, we'll do this, but that's as far as we'll go. Someone asks us to go 10 miles and we might say, "I got time for 6. That's it. Then we're done. I've got other things to do. I have other things I want to do. I don't have time for all that." And so there's a lot of reasons. Sometimes we will sacrifice and do things for peer pressure. I know that, you know, a lot of times you walk into a store and you want to see how many people are wearing a mask. If 95% of the people are wearing a mask, put a mask on. And you know, we sometimes will do that for the common good. But most of the time, we really struggle with obedience, and especially obedience to God. Well, out of this story, I want us to see what we learn. And I just want to say from the very beginning, there is a lot of information in this story. We're not going to get to a lot of it. For one thing, a lot of people think this is a prefiguration of the Christ. You notice there's a lot of things that are very similar to Jesus' story that we read in the New Testament. And in the very beginning of this chapter, it said, Take your son, your only son, whom you love. And we remember that when Jesus was baptized, God comes and there's that voice from heaven that says that about Jesus. So there's a lot of information here about sacrificing your son that correlates. And we're not going to touch on that. But what does this teach us about obedience? Now, one of the things that I think is very important, I think that God expects of us, is to use our brain. A lot of people don't even think things through half the time, and they just have this idea, I'm just going to go through and just do what I think I hear the little voice in my head say. And we don't think about things. But on the other hand, I think we have to be careful because we need to understand our limitations. It's amazing how much we think in terms of limitations of how much we think we know, how brilliant we think we are. Like I said, I was just in the hospital, and you know, here's doctors telling me, well, it's probably this or probably that, and I'm arguing with them. I'm not a doctor at all. But for some reason, I think I know better. And we do that. We have this know-it-all, and a lot of people do that. I mean, some more than others. I understand that. But, you know, maybe it's your car, and you go to the mechanic, and maybe you're pretty good with cars. You can change the oil. You might even know what a distributor is. You know, not too many of those anymore. But you go to the mechanic, and your car's making a weird sound. I think mechanics just want you to make the sound that your car is making just to laugh at you. But they'll make this sound, or they'll tell you what's wrong with your car. They'll say, oh, well, this is what's wrong with your car. And people argue with them. They're not mechanics. They're not experts at all. They've never, you know, especially some typical models, they have the same thing, you know. But I Googled YouTube, so I suddenly know more. And so we have this problem, this thing where we think we know what's going on. And when things don't make sense to us, it's usually because we're limited in our ability. And we don't trust that God knows best. And when we see that here, how easy it would have been. Abraham is told to sacrifice Isaac. Well, it makes no logical sense whatsoever. Why would he do that? This is how he was going to be this great nation. And to do this? No, it doesn't make any sense. And so many times we're just like, nah, that can't be what God said. And we just dismiss it because that just can't be. And the problem with that is it means that we're not going to reach the potential that we have. We're not going to become the people that God wants us to be. And that's something that we miss out on because of that. One of the things that comes here is with that limitation or not understanding is we don't understand what God can do. A great example is in the New Testament, the feeding of the 5,000. And you know the story. Jesus says, feed the people. And he tells the disciples, just go bring what you have. Now there's 5,000 men. We don't know how big the whole crowd is. It doesn't tell us that. Some people say 10, 15, or even more. 1,000 people. And the disciples find five loaves and two fish, right? Now that doesn't make any sense. He says, Jesus says, bring that to me. And, you know, I'll have to admit, I'm one of those kind of people that struggle with that kind of thing. I would have said, well, we can't take this to Jesus. We can't obey what he says. And look at it. It's just five loaves and two fish. It can't feed these people. That's just a waste of time. And yet, when they do, when they obey and they bring that to Jesus, that's when the miracle happens. And that's when there is enough to feed everyone and have so much left over. And so many times, because we don't understand our limitation, and we don't understand that this is an issue, we'll not do what we're supposed to do. And we miss out on so much. Well, the second thing I want us to think about from this passage is that God is not just another God. God is unique. Now, let me just explain what's going on. There were many gods, small g gods, at the time. There's many gods that people worship today. Abraham thinks he's got the one true God. This is a God who's real. This is a God who is powerful. This is the God who saves. He's not like all these other gods. He doesn't have us doing crazy things. But one of the things that all these other gods did at the time was require child sacrifice. Horrible, detestable thing. There were gods like Baal that you might have heard about. Molech, another one. Very much known for child sacrifice. And I would imagine that Abraham could have been very disappointed when he hears that he is supposed to sacrifice his son. Suddenly, this unique God isn't so unique anymore. He's just like every other god. He's asking me to do this horrible thing. You see, one of the reasons people thought that the gods required these sacrifices was because they needed to provide for the gods. When I was a teenager in Africa, I used to hunt a lot. And I remember I'd be out in the bush hunting, and we'd come up, I guess it was an altar, but it was made out of sticks, and it would have food on it. It would have rice and sauce there. And what they were doing is they were worshiping their ancestors, ancestor worship. And they would do this to provide for their ancestors. And if you didn't do that, actually the monkeys were coming and eating it, but if you didn't provide for your ancestors, you had to be very afraid because they would haunt you. You would have bad things happen to you. And I thought how tragic it was because these were people who didn't have much already. They needed this stuff. Here, this food that's expensive that they needed, and they're offering it to these gods who they believe required. Now, I want you to go back and look at Genesis 22, verse 14, just the very beginning. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." Now, in a lot of the translations, it calls it Jehovah Jireh. That's the name of God, and it means God will provide. And you might not think anything of that statement. Oh, that's nice, God will provide. But you understand that this is a complete flip from the rest of the world at that time. Instead of a God that needed to be provided for, this was a God who provided for you. Instead of Abraham needing to provide for God, he finds out that no, God provides for Abraham. This is God, the one true God that Abraham really believed in. This is the one true God that Abraham really wanted. In fact, earlier in the passage, you'll notice he says, when his son says, "Hey, you know, where's the sacrifice?" You note what Abraham says. He says, "God will provide." That's the unique God that he believed in. And how incredibly, incredible relief, I guess you'd say, when he finds out that, yes, God does provide. And not only that, he doesn't rule by fear. Now, we are to fear God in terms of give reference to God or reverence to God. But we're not to fear him like they were supposed to fear Baal or Molech or these other gods. Instead, it's a God of love. So they're going from a God, little g God, of fear and needing to provide for, to a God who loves and provides. The last thing is that obedience requires a leap of faith. Now, if you look at, I think I did that. Go to that next slide there. We'll see if we'll talk about this then. When you're in the hospital with a migraine, they call it a brain disorder, which I did not appreciate. But what they do then is every little mistake you make, you just stumble on a single word, they're all over you. And they're like, are you okay? You don't seem quite right. Anyway. Verse 13 says, and Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering instead of his son. Yeah, they had a slide that somehow dumped out of there. But it's obedience requires a leap of faith. And we see here that, now this translation says, he looked and behold behind him. Other translations don't say behind him. But the idea is that Abraham doesn't see this ram, this solution, until after God tells him not to sacrifice Isaac. And you know, the thing is, we often are not obedient until we see the result. I was had a picture up there before of a skydiver. I don't think I'd ever do that. And it doesn't matter if I understand parachute. I might have at one time. I'm old. Doesn't matter if I understand how parachutes work. It doesn't matter if I understand that this one's in good shape. It doesn't matter that I know that this parachute is packed right. It doesn't matter that I'm with somebody who knows what they're doing. None of that matters. I'm not stepping out of an airplane. So hopefully, a lot of you are braver than I am, and you'll be happy, you know, to do it. President Bush that would do that when he was in his 90s or something? No. It's not going to be me. But so many times when we are asked to do something that requires obedience, we don't do it unless we are sure we can see the end. But that's not how it works. It often requires faith. There was a movie series, and they were the Indiana Jones series. Now, if you remember the Indiana Jones series, raise your hand. I just want to see. Now, that's pretty good. But it's amazing. It used to be, a long time ago, you say that, and everybody, you know, it's like Star Wars. Everybody would put their hand up. But now, you know, people don't. But anyway, Indiana Jones was supposedly an archaeologist that was going all over the world finding treasure. And there was one called Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And in this one, he's looking for the chalice that Jesus used for the original Last Supper. And to get to it, there's a series of tests that he has to pass. Well, these are actually traps, and it's designed to keep people from finding the chalice. And if you missed one, you'd get an arrow in the side of the neck, or a dart would shoot at it, or a stone would fall on you, or you'd fall, or something bad would happen to you. And Indiana Jones has the notes from his dad, who was also an archaeologist, who had been studying all this and is finding all these solutions to all these traps that were set. And he's working his way through, and he gets to the very second to the last one, really. And he's at the edge of a cliff, this great big chasm in between him. And he can look across, and he can see the room where the chalice is. And so he's reading his dad's notes, and it says something about only those willing to take a step of faith will pass. And so finally, he doesn't know what to do, and so Indiana Jones in the movie takes this big step, and he steps down, and you think he's going to fall into this chasm. Instead, it's an optical illusion. There's a bridge across there made out of stone, but it looks like the wall on the other side. And he takes that step, and he hits the bridge. And you can see the relief, and he throws sand across it so he can see it well. And he makes his way across. You see, that's very different than how we usually do it. And what I want to leave you with this morning is I want you to just take some time And I want you to just think about how you do in terms of obedience. What is God telling you to do that you're making excuses for? You're just don't want to do it. You don't want to take that step of faith. You're just not ready to do that. Or maybe it's your family. Maybe God is calling your family to something and you're not ready to take that step of faith. You know, when Kim and I were considering this, you know, we have always said that we are going to be obedient. We've had this, our entire marriage, we've been faced with this question, what does God want us to do? And, you know, there have been churches that have come open. People suggested that we allow our name into consideration for churches. We've had churches in this area that have had that happen, and we've never felt that God has called us to any of those. When this church opened up, it was about a few days later, I said, Kim, you know that Gaines is open. What do you think about that? And she says, it's just stirred me up. And I hardly sleep. I said, well, it's the same thing for me. And so then we start thinking about it, and we start thinking about all the, you know, there's positives, but there's also a lot of negatives. And Satan just kind of throws those negatives at you at that point. In fact, just packing. When we moved to Zanesville, our last house, we'd been married 12 years. It was our 14th home. So we were done moving. And even yesterday, as I was moving some more stuff, I thought, boy, it'd be easy just to stop right now. But you take the step of faith because that is what God is calling you to do. And then finally, what, and this is why I really want to say this, I want this to be a church that is obedient. You know, one of the things we do is we compare. And we think, what should a church do? Well, the church down the street here does that. The church down that way does this. Church down that way does it. I don't care. What I want us to be, what I want Gaines to be, is a church that listens for God's voice and is willing to be what God uniquely wants this church to be. Would you bow your heads in prayer? Our Heavenly Father, we just thank you for how you love us, how you provide for us, how you take care of us. And Father, I just pray that we would be a church who listens to your voice. That we would be a church that doesn't care what other churches do, but is totally focused on what you're calling us to be. Even if we don't understand it, even if it doesn't quite make sense to our minds, and even if we don't see how it could possibly work, help us to be faithful and obedient to your calling. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
This has been a message from Gaines Church in Caledonia, Michigan. We'd love to have you join us at one of our Sunday services. Visit GainesChurch.org for more information. One life, one hope, one destination.